is actually, I'm not going to mention everyone of his degrees and things like that, but he has a lot of technical degrees and he's quite a smart guy. And he actually saw that in the money kind of space, he didn't want to become a crypto bro, but he saw actually that there is actually quite a sadistic side about how the money and the world about money is at the moment, regulated and made. And Rick has a few alternatives, and I'm going to give you the words and the presentation. I was really looking forward to it, so give already a big applause to Rick.
Well, thank you. I brought a little gift. I brought some money that I can spend. See, it looks very pretty. There's a QR code on it to a non-existent website. Who would like to have some of that? Yeah?
Free money.
So, why, by the way?
So I can get a grasp of how it's represented, and also see what I can buy with it, and how
see can what you can buy with it. That's usually the trick. So of course you're going to get some. So that's always true in economy, right? The one who shouts the first gets the proceeds. The others are in bad luck. But that's a very good start for the story. Money is actually good and it's bad. Very good about it is that it's an alternative to barter trade that makes sure that you don't need to find an apple farmer to couple with an egg farmer so they can swap one on one. That's very, very inconvenient. So having something generic in between is an abstraction to go from the apple to the money and from the money to the egg is very useful. But people will only take money when the question is answered, what can I get for it? That makes a lot of sense. It's also good because it can be something you can save for next time. Maybe you can get an apple for it in the next conference, the next hacker conference. I'm sure you can't get it now. But at least you have a pretty picture. What's very bad about money, which I really don't understand, is people are craving for it. It causes scarcity. People get anxious about it. And why, if it's man-made abstraction, it's a resource that's not real. We invented it, and it causes people to go mad because they can't make ends meet. And that's really a design flaw, as far as I'm concerned. Also, the purchasing power erodes. It might be that the apple that you can now get at the next hacker conference, maybe, is forgotten or rots away, or you might get a very mushy apple in return. So you've taken a risk. Of course, you didn't have to do anything for it. If I'd ask you to do something for it, like give me an egg, no, I'm a vegan, I would probably ask an orange. You would have to give me an orange, then you would probably have started questioning, am I going to get enough in return? So is this a worthwhile investment?
Also, you have to keep track of this.
You have to? Yeah, definitely. So the purchasing power of the money can erode over time if it's not coupled to anything real. I mean, if you have the guarantee that you can resell for it for an apple, then, well, that's a different deal. Because then I have a responsibility to grow enough apples and to be able to meet the demand. But also, three people now got something. Maybe one of you has an apple in spare, so they might sell that apple to him so that you can get a beer at the bar, for example. Because you are offering a beer and you want one and you have an apple. So you start trading. But the interest, yes you do, I just defined that you did. Do not tempt the axiom, please. But we have an uneven distribution of the money at this point, and in an economy that will start floating around, of course. So eventually it all works out, it gets everywhere. But he has very much of an advantage because he got to it very easily, very cheaply. He's the financial industry. You're the devil. Whereas you have to work for it, so you're a loser. That's pretty much the split we have in economy. Nothing personal, of course. You're a rule. So markets connect offer and demand, and that's very good because you have something on offer, you have something on offer, you have something on offer, and the money makes it all go around. That's very good. And that also means that welfare can grow. So that's good. And it's also used for solutions for uncertainty because you don't know if you are going to get your apple for it. But you might say, well, I'll give you half an apple, I'll promise you half an apple with certainty. And you could decide to make a trade that in 4 years from now, or three, or depending on diseases, whatever, next infectious diseases are always coming, you might make a trade that during the next hacker conference, you guarantee half an apple in return for half of the bill or the full bill or something. And that means you take a bit of his risk away. In return, you get more the same coinage in return for. So that's a future contract. This is the simplest form of derivative value for money. And there's other things that quickly becomes gambling. That's where you have you can opt out when he comes with his money, or where you can opt out when he wants the money, and you can basically destroy the contract. So that's the two kinds. And there's all sorts of derivatives, and they are used basically to distribute risk, to make sure that people take risk. But if you go to, for example, a copper market, 1% of the money exchanged there is for the copper, and 99% is for the risk distribution. It's a gambling game, right? And Bitcoin has suffered the same fate. Something is going wrong, and it has no bounds. One of the things that we get is because you have an advantage over him and him, you now have the advantage, and basically, if you are always the person getting the bills from me, and you too, of course, then we're going to get a very advantageous position for you. And that, of course, creates a difference between rich and poor. There are more effects growing. Sorry?
Eat the rich.
Eat the rich. Supposedly, when resources run out in society, actually, the first thing that the people do is eat their, when they lack food, the first thing they do is eat their failing politicians. Let's hope that will stop a few populists from the next election. That's a funny way to get rid of a failing president, by the way, but yeah, lots of fat. And of course, we're growing eternally. I can print as much money as you want, as long as you guys pick it up. We're going to get lots of demand for resources flowing around, and that eventually destroys the planet. We all know that. But basically, it's an uneven system, and we shouldn't have that. Now, politicians think that the economy needs to grow. We want the GDP to grow. That's nice when you're in competition with the other countries. Hey, we're doing better. But really, economic growth in the early phases helps society to build more welfare, because the money gets distributed more evenly, and there's more ways of getting things going. But at some point, welfare doesn't really grow anymore, and our standards of living are fairly constant. It's quite different from the jump from, say, the 50s to the 70s. That was quite a jump. We're not making those jumps anymore. The economy keeps boosting, though. It keeps growing. So it's mostly the financial industry. There's 99% on the copper market. That's the sort of thing that's growing. And that's why there's so very much money. Because what the ECB does, maybe I lend you the money, you need to pay it back to me, so you will have to invest it. You're the financial industry, and you need to make a profit. If that's your role, sorry for using it as a guinea pig, but you seem to take it well, thank you. If that's your role, you're going to make a risk analysis ahead of time. You're going to say, well, am I going to get enough from investing in his business? And you're going to be wise about it. You're going to make a risk assessment. You're going to see what is the interest rate. And if it does, you're going to pay back. But you are going to make a profit, and that's the way you basically are able to buy more apples. So from the proceeds that you make from his hard work. So he needs to work so that you can buy apples from money you got for free. That's very awkward. All you did was take risk, of course. And the ECB does not regulate the amount of money that it hands out, like I just did. It regulates how much trickles through to the people who have apples available. If too much money flows in there, then the real economy has an amount of goods and a rising amount of money. If that goes out of balance, then eventually the money distributes over the places, meaning all the prices have to grow until the ratio is the same as it was before. It's called inflation. Actually, this is the real inflation. It's monetary inflation, but we feel it as a loss of purchasing power because the prices are rising. And it's your fault. You're doing it. And the ECB is only controlling that. It is not controlling how fast it hands out the money. It keeps handing it out, basically. Sort of. I had an op-amp circuit, but I forgot to include it. Sorry. Money is abstract. That's very useful because you can trade apples for eggs, so you can get rid of your hens produce that you won't eat and get something nutritious instead. But the impact of money is not abstract. It kills the climate or it doesn't. And if the ECB wanted, it could eradicate the financing with euros of fossil fuels in a very simple way. Because it hands out the money, but it could split the market. Oh, it does that on a money market, as it's called. But you could actually have two money markets. A fossil one and a sustainable one. If it spends on the fossil market, there could be different conditions, like a higher base interest rate, so that your risk analysis becomes different. Because if you can get the money here, the same money, you would have a lower base interest rate that you pay back on it after a while. It will be sooner attractive to invest in something sustainable than in some fossil company. And you could play with that. The ECB has that power to do that. Also, of course, at some point, just the amount of emissions need to go down, so the ECB could continuously pull the money away from the fossil market. And we also need innovation, so it could continually put money into the sustainable market. It could be coupled, it doesn't have to. Probably you would rather couple the workforce, so the people who get laid off in one market end up working in the other market. It's very simple. But economy people and analyze data, they analyze current flows. What they don't do is what an electronics engineer does, say, oh, the design is flawed, let's redesign it, let's put in extra resistor, capacitor, whatever. The interesting thing, I just held a talk yesterday about how climate law can be used to force government in a better way than we are doing now, and I think this can also be done on the ECB. Yeah, I do need an NGO, and I do need a lawyer for that. But if you have those, if you are those, an NGO with an interest in this, let them get in touch with Scientist Rebellion and ask for the litigation group. Because we have a case pretty much ready. We just don't have the position, Scientist Rebellion, that I'm a member of. I'm in the litigation group. Scientist Rebellion is not an NGO. We're just an informal group. We can go to court, but not as an NGO. So let's redesign money that does work. Originally, people very naturally chose the gold standard. So a gram of gold defines value because gold doesn't grow on trees. People tried to make it from lead, didn't really work out. Chemists later explained why. So basically, that's a very good basis, a very good foundation for money systems. And there are gold depots that just give you accounts in grams. And there is or has been an option to pay between those accounts. I've used that 20 years ago or something. I used that to trade. And well, it's very, very pleasant because it was sort of a small social circle of people who supported each other and kept trading gold. And it's very funny because I sold domain names back then. It's not interesting anymore. But I sold domain names, so bits, air, nothing. And in return, I got gold. And that's a very funny trade. It was very lucrative, very interesting. And there's several of those. And gold has intrinsic value. I mean, it's used in industry, so its value won't plummet to zero, which is a guarantee you don't get with fiat currency. So the currency, fiat currency is the term for government money in general. And the term comes from fiat lux. That's the beginning of the Bible, there be light. And fiat money means there be money. That's what I just did. I had a shitty piece of paper. No, it was not shitty, by the way. But I had a lousy bit of paper and I handed it out and said, this is money. I defined it as money. America is doing that all the time, by the way, because they had a standard, they had a reserve currency. Although they've dropped the gold standard behind it since 1972, so I don't know why we keep doing that. Also, gold is a very proper saving currency. Guess where I have my pension. And trading accounts are easily available. Another form of energy, just another sustainable idea. Solar energy and wind energy come at different times, so the energy market influences the trading value. But if I have solar panels, I would very much like someone to sustainably use my kilowatt hours that I have in excess, especially if in return I get kilowatt hours at a time of wind excess. So I have a bit more variation. This is the sort of flexibility markets try to establish. So if I have a kilowatt hour or a gigajoule if it's heat, but a kilowatt hour of electricity, and I get paid in kilowatt hours for electricity I ditch on the net, and that I get sold to someone, then someone else could say, well, I'm going to use it at that time, and all the time I'm going to ditch too much wind, and I'm happy if you take that away from me. You would be dispensing coins worth a kilowatt hour, or a watt hour, or whatever you choose. And again, this is easily available to all. We all have a kilowatt hour meter. And by the way, the Dutch government, in all its right-wing wisdom, is now taxing that sort of passing of kilowatt hours between supplier and demand. It's really stupid. How can you be a market religious organization and still do such things? Local exchange trading systems. Has anyone heard about them? Good. So there is, and the Herald also did, I heard. Basically, what the value definition there is human human attention. You work for an hour for someone doing something they can't do. I've been hanging up an outdoor lamp, for example, that sort of thing. Small technical jobs. They can't do it, you help them. At another time, she does something for me in return, like cooking a nice meal. So this is just trading of human attention, human willfulness. And that is a really nice system. And basically, usually the currency is an equivalent of time. So an hour, or in Enschede we used a 16th of an hour, because they came out so nice in seconds. And this money expresses appreciation. And it's a positive currency. It isn't, I owe you, but you've done something for me. That's a quite different signal. Also, you can't build debt on debt if you have a positive currency, because everything is covered, because you have done something for me. So that's why you get credited. You already created the value. And as a side effect, these networks end up connecting people, creating social networks. I mean the real one with real people, not boop. That's just a wild idea that keeps circling in my mind. If we had unexcavated fossil fuels, like the gas in the Waddenzee in the north of the Netherlands, why don't we leave it there and use it to define a monetary value? If we get people to accept that, we have a very good reason for leaving it there, because otherwise we're going to get quite a fee, and we could organize in such a way that we are really convinced about that, because then people will take the money. We can do something with that. I'm skipping that for now. It's a wild idea, but I have a signal group at the end. If people want to talk about this, please. So I've been thinking about something that I called sensible money. Others call it sound money, but I didn't want to take someone else's term and perhaps hijack it and abuse it. But what I think makes money sensible is if it's positive. It should express ownership or having done something or having created value, not promising to create value. So it's not an IOU, it's I did something for you. There should be no interest. With no debt, that's actually possible, right? If you have no debt, you have no negativity, so you can't have interest. Why? Because interest is an time exponential development. Zips. And that's the worst thing you can do to people. And you hand out loans to people who are in a poor condition, and you pass it on to people who are rich, pass it back to people who are rich. And you do that at a slowly progressing pace. And as soon as they get in trouble, they're going to drop off. Because many people go to the boundaries of what they can afford, and when there's something goes wrong, you break a leg, whatever, you can't do your work. And the interest keeps piling up, and you have more than average risk of going down. Getting back up is more difficult than getting down, is what I'm saying. That's a flawed system, And actually, most religions say this, and the Islamic banking system is designed to do this. You don't need to convert to the Islam, as far as I'm concerned. That's all your own choice. But you can look at how they've done it. Interesting about the Islamic banking is they have, within their banks, they have religious leaders who basically say, yeah, this kind of financial construct would be conforming to the Quran. Quran, I should say, I believe. And the problem is that these are employed by the bank, so they are not completely free to make an individual choice, so the banks are competing with each other, so this system is eroding. So if you do this, don't base it on religion, base it on hard facts, harder, even harder facts. And yeah, I'm not being cynical. I mean, I want to be neutral about religion. Let's make that very clear. That's another talk, maybe. Title of ownership. When you buy a house, you get a piece of paper that says the house belongs to you and the ground around, below it and such. That's a legal document that you are the owner of the house. If you hand it over to someone, and with cars it's actually true, the Groene Kaart in the Netherlands, if you hand over the title of ownership, then the other people owns it, basically. Now, for houses, they're considered immobility, so you have to go to a legal procedure to actually do that. But basically, the title of ownership of the house is yours. I'm imagining money systems that do that, and this is actually how these gold depots that I mentioned are doing this. They have accounts denominated in grams of gold or in troy ounces of gold, 30 grams, French style, and there are different ounces. And basically, you own that gold. What that means is it's not on the balance of the gold depot, of the payment system. So when they go broke, it's bad for them, but not for you. It's probably going to be a mess to get your gold, but you own it. Well, that's vital. The administration of the gold depot says and keeps saying that you own it, even when they go bankrupt. And that means that you actually have a pretty good guarantee, even if it's digital, even though it's an online account. And now we can start doing fun, because now it's on the internet. Now we can start designing new systems. And the way I imagine sensible money, and that's actually what we're building, consists of basically two components that sort of fall together like a marriage. One of them is the Groene Taal system. That's a digital coin. So you mint it at some place, you get a code, you spend it somewhere else, and that's exchanges to make sure that you have actually paid it. There's been a workshop, Christian has done that. He's the expert on this, at least one of the experts that's around here. Christian, I'm sorry.
Sebastian.
Huh? Sebastian, I'm sorry. Lots of things going through your head when you do talk. Sebastian is the present, sorry for pointing you, but he knows about it, he loves to talk about it. He did a few workshops about that in the last few days. How do you get a web shop to accept Groene Taal? And why this is attractive, it has proper crypto. So there's blind signing, so you have payment. As a payer, you're anonymous. It avoids double spending, of course. There's some tricks with attributes, cryptographic tricks, so you can check if you're 18 plus. So when you hand out the money to your kids, you can mark it, no sex sites, no alcohol. And that's a tidy role separation, because you do not want one monetary system to be be managed from one particular role and giving somebody all the power. So then usually the responsibility is distributed. That's also how money is printed, for example. And that's also very carefully been designed into this system. Also very, very important and very much a nuisance, because when we hack our own little currency for standard, we don't think about financial regulation compliance. These guys are doing it. Thank you for that. Because that's a nuisance, the know your customer, the taxation implementation, making sure that you can pass tax regulation stuff. So helping out with fraud if necessary. And apparently they managed to get that working with payer privacy, which is similar to cash payment. So there's, and they have technology integration to all sorts of things. And this is a developing process, and I think they're still looking for people who are keen on extending this, right? Very open to donations, as the name sort of implies. It is open source, hardly need to add that. And the protocol is also open. It's an open protocol, I should say, right? Yes. And the coinage comes from their own implementation then. Fixed trading is the bit I'm adding to this project. And that is, FIX is the protocol. You probably have all seen these images of people on stock market chains to trade stock and to talk to someone over there. That's all been digitized, so it's now quiet on the market stock floor. But basically, they use a protocol like FIX. Usually, it is FIX, but there are a few others. But FIX is the open protocol for this. And what it does, it connects systems that pass value. And the idea is that the statements you do to purchase something, for example, are binding. Now, that's... and this allows customers... And what I use it for is to connect individual like gold depots. They all use gold. It's all grams. It's all ounces. It's compatible. So you can very easily say, I'm minting a coin in one depot. I'm paying a merchant who's with another depot, and the gold systems work out how to exchange this. Gold is just the first of the four examples I mentioned. It applies similarly to the other ones, but I'm using gold as the most clear example. So the systems can work out a way of passing the value, including passing it physically. But we can do something smarter than that. So. Basically, this is a grassroots way of allowing people to adopt the gold standard. I thought that was nice. And you need to have some form of legal basis, and for that, the gold systems need to get together one-on-one and say, can I trust you? And that's mostly a legal and technical analysis, and that's not so much a matter of, are your eyes blue enough? So, this is an example. Sorry about the small font. This is terrible on the screen. I'm sorry. But I'll walk you through. The buyer has an account, which is a title of ownership of the buyer's ownerships. The seller, the merchant, has an account, and that defines the title of ownership of the seller, the merchant. When the buyer mints a coin, basically money goes out of his account, so his title of ownership is reduced to a lower value, and it ends up in a claimable pool, which is owned by no one. It's certainly not by the gold system, because otherwise you have the bankruptcy problem while it's a coin. He now has a digital coin, a Gnutala coin, which he can use to pay a merchant. Sorry, I'm going to completely skip the Gnutala thing, because it just works. And he goes to, he's with the same gold system, so he can say, unminting, and says, oh yeah, sure, I issued that, it's in the claimable pool, I'll pass the title of ownership to you. Yeah, I can. I know I'm ugly, but I didn't know it was that bad. So when the merchant unmints the coin, or basically resilvers it, he basically instructs the claimable pool, and that's all verified. That's what the Gnutala system does. He verifies that it's indeed a proper claim, and the title of ownership that he held is passed over to the seller's account. All this needs to happen atomically, both technically atomically and legally atomically, outside the administration office, so that the administration office can do the wildest things it likes, go bankrupt, and not impair the ownership, the title of ownership. But if you get that going, you're basically built. And that's the reason I've used the fixed protocol, to be able to do that. A little more difficult is when the merchant has another gold system, then basically the minting starts the same way. It's the same coin. Passed to the merchant, he has it in his wallet. He resilvers or claims it. Then that evidence is routed to the original gold system, so it needs to reveal where it comes from, the coin. And then that can do the unminting and the passing of title of gold. However, this time the title of gold and the title to the gold cannot pass into the merchant's account, because the merchant has no account with this gold system. So it passes to an intermediate account, and the intermediate account basically defines the title of ownership of the merchant's gold system. So the merchant's system needs to have an account with them, basically a trust relationship. That gold system then has more gold available. If it's just as well covered, so fully backed and insured if necessary, that sort of thing, if it's just as secure as what this system would do, it can actually use it as an extension of its own ownership. And that means that it now has gold that it can pass into the seller's account, and now the seller or the merchant is informed that he has received his money. We have not passed physical gold, and yet we have connected to gold systems that do full backing. I think that's a good find. I think that's very useful. But it all has to be done atomically. So, fixed trading as a SWIFT alternative. How far am I in time?
You're still 15, almost 20 minutes.
Good, good. I'm making it. Good. The fixed trading was designed for stock market trading, meaning you as an individual want to trade something, you connect to the stock market, to your broker, where you have an account. The broker produces a fixed message, or you may have done it, he will forward it for you, sends that to an exchange, the market exchange. Market exchange is basically a list of buy and sell offers. And some of those overlap, the price conditions meet and can be resolved. So basically the overlapping part, he will be cured by saying this sell offer, this buy offer is going to be combined, you and our pair go off, and the exchange is the single side that does this. So this is where an atomic choice is made, a final choice is made. And at some point, the buys and the sell offers don't meet up anymore. And then the market basically stops and waits until something's added that overlaps this or that overlaps that. And this is why you have different buy and sell prices on the market. That's just the highest offer and the lowest demand, basically, that are just not meeting. When they meet, transactions take place. When they don't, they stay the same. So this is also when new orders come in, the price differences can change and it can go up and down. These exchanges are third parties, trusted third parties, also known as men in the middle, by the way. But somehow in this case, they are trusted men in the middle, because they have no interest in the trade itself. I mean, they get a fee for trades, but that's about it. So they've probably already been paid before they do anything. That's because they're financial, they will do that. So as individual traders, you rely on the exchange to be reliable and to make the right choices, and you follow their lead. The system, the grassroots system I'm proposing, don't know if you noticed, is a peer-to-peer system. That's a very important thing if you want to make a grassroots system, of course, not have a central dominating power. I would very much like to be a central bank, though. Nah. All the money is not interesting. So we need something. The other party might have an interest in tricking you. So we need something else to do that. And that's very easy because we have something called digital signatures. First, let me show you a little bit of fix and then get into what I put in there. So this will be a message fix. They tend to be 700 bytes long or something. It's sort of ASCII that there is an extension for binary insets, and it always takes the form tag is value, tag is value, tag is value. And these vertical bars are actually ASCII code 01, so control A. And they separate the fields. And when you have a binary field, it will say the length of the upcoming field is this long, and then you get, after the equals sign, you get that many bytes that might include a one character, but are not to be treated as a separator. So this is what it does. It has some facilities for grouping things together, and these groups can be repeated if the first field is recognized again. Now that's pretty much the structure. It's very simple, it's very flat. Some of the fields count as header fields, and they do things like the message length, sender target, and the message type, like this will be a login, message type equals login. As I said there as well, this is how people write it down to keep memorizing what the tags are, what their meaning are. The body is actually the content that's specific to the message type, and for the login, it could be a username, optional, it could be a password, and that's a place for raw data. I decided to put, you can extract things from a master key of a TLS secret, like 32 bytes. You put in a string, it does a PRF with the master key and with that string, and it produces a blurb. The same blurb will be produced at the other side when they do the same procedure. And that's a way to establish that you're talking to, that this protocol is being exchanged with the party on the other side of a TLS connection. That might still leave, thank you, might still leave a man in the middle attack, but for that, that you can avoid with its signature on the entire message, and I sign all the fixed messages because they need to be legally binding. So the trick there is to sign it with PGP. That's one of those binary fields, it's a detached signature over the rest of the message. You have a detached signature, and the detached signature is basically made of the key that you would mention in a contract that I'm getting this service from you, I can trust you because you deliver me this level of service, including full backing, including all the things you need to have sensible money. And with this, you actually have something that's legally binding that you can swap, and it's not falsifiable. So then the only thing that's needed is to make sure that the messages cannot be abused, and that you know that what happens in cases of replay and such. I won't get into all that, but I did solve it. And now we have legally binding fixed trades, and that's exactly what you want. By the way, the PGP signature is also on the logon message, which goes both ways, and that means you also authenticate the other side. So the TLS connection doesn't even need certificates. I just produce a random certificate on the fly. My favorite would be RSA with modulus equal to 1, because then all the signatures are 0. That's very trivial. Somehow even the silliest stack says, that might be a little insecure. So I just generate a certificate at random. And the system can be used to pass ownership. You buy and you sell, so you can use that to buy ownership. You mentioned the account, you mentioned the amount, you mentioned whether you buy or sell. And, said all that, I think. The peers mostly must trust that the others have taken care that something that bankruptcy is organized properly, so they might use third-party accounts and that sort of thing. So, a bit more schematic, what I do is I send a combined order. That's one of the things that financial people do, right? Try this and this, and when this succeeds, tone down this, or do this as well as this, either both or none. That's the atomic property I'm looking for. I want to buy, I want to sell. I want to buy 10 grams of gold, I want to sell 10 grams of gold to different accounts, and then you've got a trade. They can also add pricing to it, so there's if differences they could negotiate, they could basically settle it with financial backing. But we don't need that because we just want, say, gold in, gold out in the same amount. So that's very easy, basically. It's a very trivial use, but very important. There's many financial structures already in FIX that are ready to be deployed if people want to do something more advanced with it. So the merchant wants to deposit a coin, basically saying, I want to get something from the claimable pool of coins and get it into the merchant account. And that's basically it. You mentioned the accounts, you mentioned some instructions to do it atomically, and that's it. Then when you route a message, because you need to go through a number of hops, because I may trust you and you may trust her, but I don't trust her directly. We haven't set up contracts to trust. With a cap I can't see. I hope I'm not doing it wrong. It's complex anyway. but I could ask you to trade with that person. And then indirectly we could have a trade. Then indirectly we could have a trade. And that's a way to basically have a peer-to-peer network that can grow very quickly and very, very aggressively. Not aggressively, but just quietly. And what you do before you route something, first you make reservations against your local accounts if something is going to be taken off. Then you route it, because otherwise you might be breaking the full backing. So that sort of things are needed all the time. And then when the upstream returns success, then you know you're going to finalize the reservation, pass it into the accounts. And if they return failure or there's some other problem, you basically roll back the reservation and report that back. And this can also be done across a number of things. The last node, namely the one where the coin gets... Sorry. The one where the coin is being held, the last node has the deciding vote. So just like the exchange. But this is all PGP signed, so it's not a man in the middle. It's a man at the end, actually. It always needs to be at the end. But basically, this guy can be trusted because he gave out the coin and he doesn't mind pushing it into another account. It's not his ownership anyway. So then it looks like this. You've just added an intermediate account, which was the account that defined the payment system. So that basically the claimable pool goes into the account of the system holding this, the payment system holding this, because that their value increases and because that the seller's account increases. So the funny thing is what you do here, you take 10 grams out of the claimable pool, you add 10 grams to the intermediate account, though from their perspective it looks the other way, and you add it also to the seller's account. That's a bit strange, but it works. It does the trick. So, and to get atomicity, basically I said I make a list, two or three of those items are in there, initially two. Same value, equivalent value, opposite direction, no pricing, so no settlement in dollars or euros or whatever. Because it's equal, it's going to balance out. Every list item has an account, tag value one. And you can insert intermediates. And to make it atomically, there's something called the contingency type. So all these financial people want to have all sorts of constraints, and they've been very creative about that. They want to have all sorts of constraints on the transaction taking place. And that's called the contingency type. And this one says, if one happens, then the other happens too, or the others in my case. So that's just a predefined notion. So we're using fix as it's intended, although it's a very limited subset, but we're using it as intended. And that means that we can actually rely on other people also understanding what we are doing. That's convenient. They have a code in common that binds them together, and that's needed to interpret the contingency type and know what lags are involved, what list items are involved. They have an execution instruction that says all or none, and all or none means either you do this trade exactly at the amount given or you do it at zero. And because they trigger each other, they all it's going to be all the list elements going to do to make the same choice. That's basically the idea. So it's all the list items do the complete trade or none. And you can even say do it right now, and that's called fill or kill. Must be Unix people who thought of this. So money, I think, really changes the way we deal with each other, the way we trade with each other. If it's a beautiful sign, you easily accept it. Maybe you get an apple, you don't even know. But if it's debt, we are making that. Thanks. That's basically, it's important to think of what does our money mean? What is the definition of what we call a currency unit? And that's why I started this work. This has been in my head for 10 years, 20 years, since I worked with a gold system, actually. And it's quite easy. You just trade the title of ownership, and you can have global networks that grow crossroads, and that basically are an alternative money. Why is that interesting? Because the current system is destroying the climate. I think it's useful, and it's the kind of people that we are who should be thinking about alternatives and building them and getting them into the world. So that's why I start this work. If you find it interesting, in whatever way, this is a Signals chat group. The link is also on the page for this presentation, so you can easily get it afterwards as well. But just hop on board, join the discussion. I don't know where that's going to go, but you're welcome to join. Now that's the story. Do we have time for questions?
Of course you have.
We do, yeah. Yes. We didn't agree if we would leave any. Good. And are there any? Make him run around for his non-money. Oh, wait, we can pay him for running around.
Thanks so much for a really interesting presentation. Tell me what I didn't quite catch. If this GNU Taylor addresses the loans problem.
If GNU Taylor addresses?
Loans problem.
Loans?
Loan.
Oh, basically, that's not a GNU Taylor property. Yeah, he's nodding, he's shaking. In my definition of sensible money, it doesn't exist. That's the reference I made to Islamic banking. If you want to start a business, and I'm a rich bastard, then I'm going to be the bastard that helps you to the money, and that also wants to get something out, so I'm going to help to guide you towards profit, meaning we become partners on whatever basis, whatever equal or whatever. You get the money, you do the work, I put in the money, you put in the work, we agree on how you're going to do it, and I share in your profit, so part of your profit is mine, and we agree on that contractually before. Or if you have a loss, that's also my loss. I'm going to lose the money I gave to you if it goes wrong. And that's why I want to be part of your board. That, by the way, is what all the very good investors do as well. So the Warren Beatty's, that sort of people. They sit on boards and they help to control the direction of the company. And this is Islamic banking. This is a loan under Islamic banking. You don't need a debt. Similar story, if you want to buy a house, you now need to get a very high mortgage and you're paying off for many years. How do you do that? A lease construct. Just pay something like rent for months in a row and at a certain point it stops. And if you sell it halfway, well, you've built up some part of some share in the thing you got a mortgage on, the house, whatever, the building. And you basically become a co-benefactor of the interest being paid from that moment on. It's very easy to do these things. I actually submitted it to DESIS yesterday. I thought it was very interesting, but didn't do anything with it. It's just rethinking, creative rethinking. Yep?
That's great.
Good. Other questions, if you have time? You should take charge, by the way. I'm not monitoring the time. I'm just having fun.
Yeah, we have 2 minutes more. Will be probably the last question.
How do you see this like actually being implemented internationally, like ECB level, or you need a big system to do this at one time, right? You can't just...
It's a peer-to-peer system. Everybody just runs this fixed code as well as the infrastructure for Gnutala.
Sure, I mean, it's going to influence the rest of the financial system in theory, right? I mean, you're going to have all sorts of weird capital flight issues and all sorts of weird and wonderful things? I guess you just decided at a community level to start doing it and go from there?
You're going too fast. Please slow down.
Yeah.
And hold the microphone a little closer.
Yeah. So you think you just start at a community level entirely peer-to-peer and then go from there, I guess?
Yep.
Yeah.
Call Depost to be the backing out there. We can also wait for some form of government to stand up and do this, but we can also do this. We have freedom of association, right? This is typically a form of association, doing something, choosing to do something together. Also, human rights courts tend to interpret the freedom to association also as the freedom to not associate. So you cannot be forced to comply to euro, dollar, whatever. You can choose to fully get out, but I think everybody practical would just say, I'm going to try it a little and then trust it less or more. Previous slide is coming up. Yep.
Hi. So a couple of days ago, we had a scenario where we weren't able to use our credit cards due to the power outage. So my question is, does this system have like an offline mode where in case infrastructure goes down, I would be still able to use the funds that I have in my account? So no internet, no cellular network, that type of stuff?
I was explained only yesterday, Friday it was. I was explained that Gnutaler has solutions for that, something based on OTP codes. You can prepare and then pay offline, like at a camping site like this that has no internet connection because the power is down. Yeah, please add. Yeah, can you help him? Ha, he wanted me to jump off and down the stage, now I'm making him run. Good for him.
Suddenly becomes a Gnutaler talk. No. No, it's not technically, you're not paying offline. Of course, it's a digital payment, so you had to be online, but you had to be online with exchange, not with the internet. So in the case that you were explaining, the wallet needs to be connected to the exchange that can be locally, for example, here in the camp, not outside. So if you have an outage of internet, you still can access the exchange. But was explained yesterday that the merchant, the seller can be completely offline without connection, and we be able to check that the order was paid without checking the merchant server, so with a QR code and an OTP device. So that's a neat feature of Tether.
Yeah. And yeah, with that, I think we're going to wrap up, right?
Yeah. That's indeed true. So thank you very much, Rick, and all the other people. Yeah, big applause.